Welcome to the Rachel Geek Podcast. You might know me from places such as YouTube and Spotify or Shambhala or on the street sometimes. Sometimes I get into crazy conversations with people on the street, so I don't know. And maybe you don't know me at all. Yeah, in this last year, I've done a deep dive in like trauma therapy and EMDR and internal family systems. A couple years before that, I really dove deep into some ayahuasca. Anyways, I just need a place to put all these things that I haven't really been able to clearly articulate until now. I just needed a place to put them. And maybe you take away something from this. Maybe you're just like, could care less. That's fine. I'm not even sure I'm going to post this on the internet. All I know is that speaking feels better for me right now than writing. So I just need somewhere to put all this because after my life experience, I feel like there are populations out there that we are gravely misunderstanding and judging and failing. Truly. And all I want to do is just talk about it. I don't know what the solution is, but I know what my experience is. And I just want to share parts of that. So today, I just want to talk about kind of in the short form version, you know, where my mental health journey started and where it ended up. In 2008, 2009, I was diagnosed with borderline personality disorder. Big old BPD. Really great name, by the way, when someone tells you that you have a disorder of your personality. So just first off, out the gate, not high hopes when you get that diagnosis because the language around it alone is like horrible. I understand why they named it that, but they could have came up with something a little more hopeful. I don't know. I was diagnosed with BPD and at 3 a.m. in a psych unit in Calgary, I just had some psychiatrist who I'm pretty sure was high on blow, but maybe I was still a little psychotic. He came in at 3 a.m. and threw a brochure at me, a BPD brochure, and had some resources and numbers and was kind of just like, you know, very business-like, very efficient, very effective, very much like a business. And I'm not here to point fingers, like he was doing his job. I just wanted to offer a different perspective because it's no wonder people are having a hard time healing when this is how we treat these things. And there's just no education on it. Like there's just no education anywhere. Anyways, throws me a brochure, 3 a.m. Great. Awesome. I actually did feel validated at that time because I was like, thank God. And like I knew something was wrong. And there's a bunch of stories I could tell before that, but I get the diagnosis and I'm like, awesome. A little bit of relief. Okay. Knew I had to do dialectical behavioral therapy, which I'll get into in another episode. This is just the intro. But before I did that, I thought it would be a great idea to drive to California in one shot with my friend to meet a guy that I thought I was in love with on the internet. And I'm going to get into that later because usually I would have felt a lot of shame about that. Like definitely some embarrassment around that one. But now that I've like gone to the depths of healing and therapy, like I really have found a source of empathy for myself on why I used to do these things. And that's why I want to talk about it. Because I'm sure there's someone in your life that your friends gossip about or judge for the decisions that they're making. And we don't have the education to point to the fact that they're actually surviving and doing very normal things considering the situation they were in. And this is, we just need a language overhaul. There's enough war in the world right now. That's it. And I'm not here to be a hero at all. I'm just like very like, we just all need to calm down. Anyways, drove to California, save that for another day. It actually was so fun. No regrets there and slightly embarrassed, but definitely have more empathy for myself now because I know why I did that. So, and I was fresh out the psych unit, you know, like just full on. And there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, there's probably some things wrong with it, but looking back now, I'm just like, nice. So I do DBT, same kind of vibe in the first round of DBT that I did, like very like business-like. Could definitely tell the therapists were, they were nice people, but they just never have experienced anything I had. So I just knew there was just like a lack of connection there. I just like knew, it was almost like they were reading, it's almost like I was talking to a textbook. And maybe that was just the luck of the draw I had for therapy at that time. And I did it. And I thought, yeah, great. I'm just going to pretend like I don't have this diagnosis anymore because it's not, I don't know if you have looked up anything online about BPD, but there's nothing really nice about it. And honestly, I don't blame some people. I was pretty mean at some points in my life and there's a reason for it, but it's, yeah, I get it. I just wish there was language to bring more understanding to it, because then I think it would also hold people more accountable on both sides. So I do DBT. Everything's great. Or so I thought. Get into a relationship. Wasn't ready for one. Very unwell. Very abusive relationship across the board. That's probably around the other time that I really dove into my BPD stuff, because up until then, like when you're navigating the system with that diagnosis, like you get a lot of weird comments from professionals that are like, oh, you're just emotionally immature. Oh, that's all that is. Like, okay, so I guess like no one really touches on trauma, which in my opinion now, having this diagnosis for 16 years, like it's complex trauma. I do not see the difference between the two. There is none. One just has a little more validation and empathy and one doesn't. So when I was navigating that system and I'd have, you know, people, professionals just be like, you're just emotionally mature. Just like, you're just, you know, you're just too emotional. It's just like, okay. And then you're in a relationship where someone holds that over your head as well. I really, you know, and I'm sure I wasn't a shining ray of light then either. I just really so badly wanted to experience a healthy, happy life. And getting that diagnosis, I just felt so much shame that I would never obtain that life. I would never be worthy of finding love because of attachment trauma. Again, I don't know why BPD is separate from complex trauma. So I, you know, around that time, I started going into Reddit forums to really, you know, I really wanted to get the truth of other people's perceptions of people with BPD and be okay with it. And I did. I read so many Reddit forums and so many videos online of people who had been hurt by people with BPD. And let me mind you, that also in itself is a stereotype and a stigma. Not everyone with BPD is like that. I'm going to save that for a whole other thing. And also, I'm not a therapist, no PhD. I should have a PhD in the amount of therapy I've done. Like, you've named the therapy, I've probably done it. And you don't get a certificate. You actually just spend thousands of dollars and then people are like, okay, you're okay. You're all right. So I just want to offer a perspective that's not from a textbook. So yeah, I read all those Reddit forums. I really was trying to find like pioneers in the psychology realm that could offer different perspectives other than just like, oh, BPD. Like it just always felt like surface level when I was reading up about it. Like, oh, they like self-harm. They have abandonment issues. They dysregulate a lot. Like it used to be called emotional dysregulation disorder. But none of it was like why. And the only things I could find why is that like some of it was trauma, but then some of it was genetic or hereditary. And even then, my argument is that it's still trauma, but we will get there. And yeah, I really wanted to self-reflect because I was so tired at that point of having that diagnosis held against me. And to be fair, we didn't have the education for people to even understand how to begin to support me. Because it was, I see that now. It's such a big ask from the amount of healing I've done until now. And then I ended up leaving that situation and having one more psych unit stay. This one was just for a day. 12 hours can really fly by when you're ranting at a nurse, but she was great. And now I know why I did that. And in between all of this, like I had dabbled into the ayahuasca world, you know, DMT, and so much benefit came from that. But there's also a gap in, you know, people with complex trauma like me, and integration without proper support can be very dangerous. Although there is huge benefit to it, I really would love to see those two worlds combined with each other, because they both have so much to offer. And I think it can be really, really, really dangerous to go and do these substances without proper support. I think it's like vital. But I really love combining both worlds. I think everything has something to offer. So that's what I was doing, is I was doing ayahuasca ceremonies, and I did get access to therapy for a while too, but DBT is very expensive, like $300 an hour. And I don't blame them. Like, I'm probably very traumatizing to talk to about my life. And I also feel bad about that, but you know, you get the cards you're dealt and you just have to love yourself. So I left, and then I did the scariest thing I could have done, and I moved provinces. And I know to the majority of you, that doesn't sound scary at all. But for someone like me that has attachment wounds, which I really want to make a whole episode about, really how debilitating, truly debilitating attachment wounds are, and how there are populations of people we are failing because you can't synthesize attachment. I mean, you can to a degree, but it's not... it still leaves that empty, hollow feeling within. And it's not nice. It's not a nice time. I moved provinces, and by that point I had done 3 ayahuasca ceremonies. So I moved provinces, very scary. I knew I needed to do it. I knew I needed to surround myself with positive people, because I was a very big pessimist and very negative and very victim mind state. And I met some incredible people that I was so blessed to move in with. And at first it was very difficult because they were so positive and I so wasn't. And I remember just like, ugh. But I was so sick of my cycle by then. And there's so many little stories in between here that I could get into, but I'm just trying to give the nutshell today to start somewhere, so I don't just make like 17 versions of this and spiral into oblivion. So I moved and purposely put myself in that positive environment because I knew it's what I wanted. I wanted to be positive. And let me tell you, that first year it was not positive for me, but it challenged me. But I just kept committed to that. You know, I read a lot of neuroscience and psychology, and no, I don't have a degree, but there's one thing I understand about creating a new neural pathway. If I was to make a self-help book, honestly, I would just make it one page. And I would say, like, pick your favorite forms, like, pick your favorite ways of adapting and repeat, like, repetition. Like, repetition is how we create neural pathways. So, like, driving a car. That's why sometimes when you're driving, you, like, check out and then you show up at your next destination and you're like, oh, my God, I don't even remember getting here, because you're doing it every day. So it becomes almost programmed within you. So that was my logic when I moved from a very negative environment and negative mind state and victim mind state to a very positive environment, very opposite. And it was very uncomfortable at first. But I just kept to the science that I had researched and was like, everything you research says that repetition is the way out. So we're just going to repeat. I'm going to go from living alone, after spending some time homeless again. There's so many stories I could get into. I'm just not going to today. I'm just going to try and put this in a nutshell. Repetition. And now looking back, that was like one of the best decisions I've ever made, because now I'm so positive all the time. Not all the time, but like, oh, it's going to make me cry. Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy what your environment can do. And if you're someone that wants to do this, like I promise you, it'll be so uncomfortable at first, but then all of a sudden one day you're like, am I the positive person now? Like, what happened? I'm grateful. I used to never be grateful for anything. I used to just want to burn the system down. And don't get me wrong, I still do, but at least I'm grateful that I have a beautiful home I live in and drinking water and food in my fridge and beautiful friends around me and a beautiful community I get access to. So yeah, that move I made was terrifying, especially after being homeless, leaving a very abusive situation, and then ending up here in this other province. And then I thought I was going to become an ayahuasca master. And I was like, I'm going to do like 300 ayahuasca ceremonies, and I'm just going to be so woke. I'm going to be more woke than anybody I know. And then I ended up doing 4 and almost went back to the psych unit. So I was like, you know, the ceremonies themselves, challenging but incredible. I don't regret it. What I regret is not having like a proper therapist after, or like the money set aside, or like the resources set aside to help integrate the things that I had experienced. Because I do not regret doing those. And the shamans I sat with, they were great. After those 4 ceremonies, they're like, you can't come back for a while, with all the love that we have, and you're always welcome to visit. And I did those 4 ceremonies, and it was another big turning point. And it's so ironic, because in one of my last ceremonies, my intention was to get to know every single part in my head. And I remember the one shaman sitting across from me looking at me being like, are you sure? She was one of the supporting shamans. And I was like, yeah, why? And she was doing a PhD in psychology. And she looked at me, she's like, that's a terrifying intention. And I was like, no, I'm ready. Fast forward a few months later, and I was not ready. I did not have the tools. So I want to save that for another episode, because the medicine itself was beautiful and has given me so much. And I also see a hole where we need to be helping people integrate safer after those experiences. Because if you get someone like me in there with really, really complex trauma, and I just didn't have the skills to understand what was happening on that front when I came back. Anyways, I did end up finding stability. And then I found meaning in getting a job at a youth shelter in town. And that's when my other big change happened. I'll never regret working there. I don't know if any kids would ever find me here. You might. But some of my favorite times ever happened in that place. There was some brutal times, but there was some really... there were some really magical kids there that I would consider my own. And I know it's like probably unpopular, unprofessional opinion to say that, but who, like, I'm human and those kids are human. And, you know, I, based off my life, I never really had kids of my own. Yeah, that place taught me so much. And if you are a kid from that place that crossed paths with me, just know that I do think about you a lot. And I am always sending good energy out towards you. And whatever you choose to do, I know you're going to do it. And just because I can't be in communication with you right now doesn't mean I don't care. And I, it's going to make me cry. This is why we need to talk about this, because that place, it taught me so much about where the gaps are in our society and where people deserve so much more than they're getting. And we need more education out there. I spent time at this youth shelter, met some amazing staff as well. Some of the best people I know ever. And I'm just laughing because I just have so many great memories with all of them. And I'm hoping one day in the future that they would come on here and talk, because they are some of the coolest people ever and passionate. And they were so good with the kids and like that. Yeah, that place was a weird little portal. Fast forward at the end of that. So I ended up having to take a year of trauma therapy. And in this last year of doing this trauma work, I did EMDR, internal family systems. And, you know, I took the medication and I did exposure therapy. And I have never been more relentless in a therapy in my life. I was so sick of this stupid cycle that I've been caught in my entire life. and then being judged for it, and then being shamed for it, and being just invalidated for it, and even the name for it. Like, it just, we can do better. And, you know, to these therapists in the last year, it was pivotal. And I'm so grateful that I had the opportunity to do this work with them. And I could tell that they, like, genuinely really cared. And I think that's what made them so good. I could feel that. Absolutely. And yeah, I went to the bottom of my trauma. And it gave me a whole new perspective on populations and why we're failing them, and that I never had BPD. It's been complex trauma this entire time. It's just going through the system with complex trauma is much more validating than a personality disorder. And I get why they say personality disorder, because it is, you know, these attributes that become so ingrained that they would consider it part of your personality, and a lot of them are maladaptive. But the way that I would look at it as BPD is just complex trauma that started at a much earlier age. And I don't even blame, you know, my parents or my, you know, anybody's caregivers. Like, nobody taught us this. Nobody, like, taught, we don't have emotional intelligence education anywhere. So it literally just was dependent on whatever lineage you were born into, or hopefully your lineage didn't have that much trauma. So now we have, you know, a world with no emotional intelligence, no, like, psychology education. And now we know, I think it's called epigenetics. Now we know that trauma does get passed down through generations, and there's no education. So basically it's just like a crapshoot that you get born into, and you just hope to God that your lineage figured out how to do safe attachment. And so that's, like, what I've come to the conclusion of. When I was navigating the system this time as someone with complex trauma, and the thing I loved about these therapists is they really just, like, put my diagnosis to the side. And that's going to make me cry again, but I'm not going to. It was so nice to be seen. It was so nice to be seen and not just, like, judged. And navigating the system from the lens of I have complex trauma, the whole energy was different. I had more empathy for myself. It was easier to validate myself. I found more validation from therapists and professionals I crossed paths with, and my symptoms made more sense. If you're someone with BPD, you know that there's moments where you get that rush of emotions and you lose your mind. And maybe this will resonate with you. Maybe it's not. Maybe it won't. You get to decide and choose what works for you. But through my, you know, time here in this last year, those are emotional flashbacks, bro. Like, nobody tells us that. They're just like, oh, that's the BPD. Or, like, I don't even know how you can have BPD and they're the same thing. Like, complex trauma is such a wide spectrum, I feel like, in everyone's nervous system, depending on their lineage and their brain makeup and, like, their genetic, like, everything is going to present a little different. So those moments when you get that rush of emotion, and especially if you have, like, pre-verbal trauma, and it's not because, and this isn't, you know, some people, you might be disconnected from your parents or whatever, but some people, I love my parents. They just didn't have the, you know, none of us did. I feel like the boomer generation, a lot of them, there wasn't any skills on this. And that's, and it's probably a colonizer thing too. I'll get into that another episode. I want to make sure I deliver that one correctly. But I, no one teaches you. So if you are not, you know, babies die if they're not properly attached. Babies die. It's proven. That is a proven thing. That's not me, like, pulling it out of the air. Like, babies die. So one of the big things that they say is different between BPD and complex trauma is, like, the unstable sense of self. People with BPD have a very unstable sense of self. But if we know, like, even the most of basic psychology, we know that that comes from safe attachment and having, you know, proper yourself properly reflected back to you. But if we're living in a world where no one even teaches you how to do those things, that's traumatic. Like, that's trauma. they say the other thing is, you know, people with BPD will self-harm. And again, if you aren't reflected or mirrored back ways to healthily emotionally regulate, or you're also reliving emotional flashbacks in your nervous system from several generations ago that were pre-verbal, because those brain pathways on how to emotionally regulate like weren't sustained, and then you got trauma, like self-harm is actually a very short-term effective way to regulate, but not long-term. And this isn't me encouraging people to self-harm. What I'm saying is, like, if you have done self-harm, like, there's no shame. Like, nobody teaches us these things. You did your best in that moment to calm down, because it does work in the moment when you have no other skills. And to me, not being taught how to emotionally regulate properly is a trauma. That could also be tied into attachment. So that's, yeah, the abandonment thing. If you're not securely attached, like, that's a trauma. So I just don't see the difference between the two. And I find these days people are collecting diagnoses. And I know I almost went down that spiral, because it was like I was feeding this bottomless pit of trying to find validation. And it's so much more complex than just what I'm saying. And I really want to get into it throughout this podcast based off of what I've learned, especially around attachment. And just, yeah, it's totally flipped how I see how people survive now. It's crazy. It's complex trauma. And maybe not every single part of it is, but I would say the vast majority of people getting these diagnoses, it's complex trauma. And the good news is we can treat complex trauma. It takes time, but it's treatable. And it's way more validating, man. The other thing they say is people with BPD are genetically born just like more sensitive. And first off, I want to say, where are the brain scans? I never got a brain scan when I, you know, got diagnosed. Like, we could say that, but unless you had a brain scan to prove that, like, please, please show me. And on the other hand, if you, you know, if that is a fact, you still need to be treated a little differently, because, like, that's a brain deformity or a genetic thing. Maybe I don't want to say it's a deformity, because I love that about myself. It would still be traumatizing to grow up in an environment that didn't understand that. Trauma. It's all trauma, guys. Like, listen, I've been at this like 16 years now. And after treating my BPD like complex PTSD, I feel like I'm finally coming out of like a very deep sleep. And I think what was happening before is that I was just having so many emotional flashbacks that they just all were overlapping with one another. And then I slowly went crazy, because who wouldn't? Who wouldn't be a snap case if they were just in constant emotional flashbacks that you can't even pinpoint them anymore? Anyways, we'll save that for another episode. This was just kind of my intro one, and I didn't want to go over 30 minutes, but here we are. So that's where I am now. And I'm feeling more clear and grounded than I ever have, and more confident in the ways I want to articulate these things, because I just think it's so important. Because I know when I first got that diagnosis, so much shame and so little understanding, and people used it against me. I mean, people still probably would use it against me now. And I just want the narrative to change, because it's not very hopeful when someone says personality disorder. At least for me. For me, it was a lot more hopeful when it was like, these are emotional flashbacks. And it made it easier for me to detach from those moments and to find care for myself, and to also create secure attachment with myself as best as I can, because babies die. I have so many things I want to get into and talk about, but this will be my first one. And it's going to be a little scattered, so I don't... And eventually I have so many cool people I want to bring on here and talk to you about all this stuff, because there's just so many cool people in my life that have overcome so many difficult things, and they did it. And like, I'm telling you, like, life stories that I haven't you couldn't even fathom that they still are out there killing it. And we, something I've noticed in these communities, you know, I did sit in a Cambo ceremony at the end of trauma therapy too. I will save that for another episode. In these communities, there is like this new breed of healed people coming through that I'm, you know, I'm crossing paths with here and there. And they're the ones that we don't know. They're like the pioneers, man. They're the ones that the textbooks like said that they were one way, and now they are so evolved in their healing that they are leading people. And it's so inspiring and beautiful to watch, because the way that society in this system really, you know, perceives people like me is that like we are just destined to, I don't know, a broken life. Like one that's kind of together, but like you're mostly going to struggle forever. No, no, not if you have a good community. So I'm going to say that for another day. But if you made it this far, thank you so much for listening. I'm going to try and put out one of these a week and hope for the best. Thanks.